Thanks for listening to the Flatback 4 podcast. Football is not coming home, so Rome will have to do for now.
Right, lads, we're going to discuss the final, the big final we were all waiting for, Italy and England. I know we were all hoping that it wasn't going to come home, and thankfully it didn't come home, and it's in Rome, which is a much nicer place for it to be, thank God. Anyway, to discuss the game, while it wasn't as exciting maybe as earlier games in the tournament, it was still fascinating in its own right. We're going to discuss the game, I suppose, and what went on. So, Ken, I might come to you first. The game has started, we're only about 2 or 3 minutes in. Luke Shaw scores. What's going through your head? What do you think? What was your reaction at the time?
I think it was 1 minute, 32 seconds on the clock or something. A brilliant cross by Trippier, crossfield ball. And Shaw, they called him Shawberto Carlos for, you know, during the tournament. That was kind of a signal for it. And it was kind of me thinking, was my prediction going to be right here? How are Italy going to break England down now? Going to sit six men behind and get a couple even more further back. You can see Kane coming really deep back into the midfield. Never doubt the Italians, though. Never doubt the Italians, as Dixon would always say. Never doubt them. And Mancini, second half. You can see at the end of the first half, last 15 minutes or so, Italy started to come really, really into it. Mancini decided, obviously, to change a tactic or two. So I thought England, first 30 minutes, really on top of it. Last 15, Italy really came into it. You could see the passing exchange in the midfield. They started to push up the pitch. Chiellini and Bonucci really being key to that, moving up and up. Emerson, surprisingly, was growing into the game in that game. I thought he had a really, really good game, surprisingly. Second half, Italy, as Mancini made a couple of little, you know, tactical switches, really dominated the 45. Dominated the 45 altogether. Got the deserved equaliser. Should have won it in the 90 minutes for me, deservedly. But obviously, we'll get to the end later on. But definitely his changes that Mancini made. And during the game, his substitutions were very good all round. And credit to Italy during the 90 minutes. They definitely deserve to beat England in the 90 minutes itself. But I was concerned, as you're saying there. I was concerned.
You're concerned, yeah. No, Italy were super, and I agree with you. And England did start very brightly in the game. Elliot, I'm going to come to you next. Just, I suppose, England went ahead and were playing well, and then they kind of sat back, and then Italy get that goal. Did England pay a price for sitting back so much when they could see that goal? Did they? It seemed like they kind of hit a slump and couldn't really get out of it after sitting back for so much in the game. Would you agree with that, or how did you see it when you were watching it?
No, I do agree. I agree with most of what Ken has said there. I think they get the goal early, and then the crowd is bouncing, so they're obviously going to get some momentum from that as well. But they didn't really get a lot of massive chances. And I think with Italy, and that's why I had the likes of Verratti in my team in the tournament, Verratti and Jorginho, they didn't panic, just kept playing football, kept passing the ball around, didn't play the occasion, just played the game. England get the goal. And people say maybe a cliche, they scored too early, because I think they just, as soon as that 30 minutes was up and they kind of had the better of Italy, and as soon as Italy start getting the better of the ball, England were just sitting back, basically. There was only one team that was going to score then, and it was Italy. So I think England paid the price for that, because they were getting a lot of joy on the right wing back, and the left wing back, Shaw, was brilliant. And Emerson had a couple of tricky moments at the start, but then he just came into the game. They weren't as confident passing the ball around, and Italy just came into it. And like I said, there was only one team going to score.
And that was Italy. England paid price.
The setback, and they invited the pressure onto themselves. And then when the crowd gets a bit edgy, it seeps down into the pitch and into the players. So yeah, I think they were victims of their own kind of mistakes there.
Yeah, definitely, and it kind of did weigh down on England as the game went on. I definitely agree with you on that one, Dixon. the performance of Declan Rice, while England didn't have many great performers, you could argue on the night, I think everybody would agree Declan Rice was very good. I think Barella was taken off as well, which was maybe a testament to Rice and how he was performing. Are you a big fan of Declan Rice? Would you agree? How did you think he played?
Yeah, I thought he was probably one of England's best players on the night, along with Luke Shaw, maybe Maguire as well. But Rice throughout this tournament has been good to very good, I'd have to say. Him and Phillips have done well together. I think they've complemented each other well. They're both young players coming into their first major tournament, so they kind of helped each other out. And they've complemented each other well. One's played not as well. The other's played better. So, and like I said, a testament to Rice's performance that Barella was taken off after 55 minutes. And Cristante came on. I think Barella's on a yellow though, so maybe there's some something playing in Mancini's mind for that. But to answer your question, I am a fan of Rice as a player. Yes.
Yeah, I thought he was fantastic. I thought he went on those solo runs. And not that he had much support because of the way England were playing, but he just took the pressure off for a few minutes. He was putting in tackles, intercepting. I just thought he played really well. Kenna, I'm going to come to you with a real kind of, I suppose, a tactical question for you. Something I noticed during the game. It's 1-1 in the game with Italy and England. I'm watching the two England retreat every time back into their shape. Chiellini and Bonucci are passing the ball to Jorginho and Verratti, who are the playmakers for Italy, and have absolutely no pressure on the ball when they're receiving it. They're allowed to get the ball, turn, dictate, and try and play it out. Is that naive from Southgate to keep, I suppose, going back into that defensive shape? Should he have changed it to make England kind of push higher up the pitch, try and dispossess Italy? Do you think he should have changed it, or am I right in saying that Jorginho and Verratti, I suppose, at times had it a bit too easy?
No, he definitely should have changed. He was too conservative through, in my opinion, through the tournament, but this game particularly, very conservative, piling the pressure on his England side. I definitely think he should have taken off and went maybe to a back four. He should have taken off somebody else and went to a back four at times. I know he did it later on, but he should have done it earlier, in my opinion. I really was disappointed to see the likes of Saka get on ahead of the likes of Sancho in that sort of time where, you know, you need, like, I know Saka has pace, but he hasn't played like Sancho, who would have a bit more, you know, inside knowledge about where to be in positions, got similar pace. Southgate, for me, should have brought on Grealish a lot quicker, someone to win your free kicks, who was going to, you know, hold the ball, win those frees, take the pressure off England. And if you're a manager, you're looking at Chiellini, Bonucci, they're halfway up the pitch. If you're going to play a conservative way, why aren't you hitting more on the counter-attack? This is England just sat back, and if they got the ball, booted it long, and hope for the best. And everything was gone back to Donnarumma and moved on again. So Southgate, very conservative, and he let England down with his changes and his tactical approach.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, because I just think, you know, sit back, soak up the pressure, but when Italy do score, you need to respond and change it up. And I think Southgate, I think he failed in that department. As you say there, he definitely could have done more. England could have hit better on the counter-attack. And I know people are giving out about Harry Maguire booting the ball. But if I get the ball and I'm a centre-back and I have nobody looking for the ball or looking to play out and I'm going to be under pressure, I have to boot the ball up the pitch or I'm going to lose the ball in a dangerous area. So I had sympathy for Maguire from that point of view in the game.
Elliot, that's down to the midfielders as well, not showing for the ball as well. I did think when England were under pressure, the likes of Rice and Phillips, they didn't show for the ball as much. Like they were shown for the first 30 minutes when the crowd was up, they were all shown for the ball. There was never a non-option there. But as soon as the pressure started to come on in the second half, as Kenneth said, that's when players started to hide, I think, a little bit. And I just go back to the Grealish thing. I think everyone keeps mentioning that he wins all the free kicks. When did that become so important? like to talk about his win, the fact that he wins free kicks every time you talk about Grealish. It actually annoys me. Maybe I missed the ball with this one. Oh, the first thing, most fouls in the Premier League. That's ridiculous. I think everyone keeps on talking about that. I think Grealish is a brilliant player, but to mention, first of all, everyone mentions it, how he wins all the free kicks.
Everyone goes about there. With the press, I think
because people go on about way too much how many free kicks he wins.
But if you're under that much pressure, the way England were, you need somebody to take the pressure off you and move you up the pitch. And Grealish is the only real option that can do it, like consistently and do it. Especially when you're that far back. That's why I mentioned that daily. They're so far back. If you're getting someone up to the halfway line to move you a little bit more forward, he's the guy that can win a free kick and has that little bit of skill about him and, you know, nous to actually win these frees. And that's why I do think he would have been the man to take the pressure off England.
Especially when they have players like Kane and Maguire in the box that you can whip it into. So maybe that's exactly their thinking as well.
Yeah, I just think they put a lot of emphasis on the free kick thing. Everyone who talks about Grealish, but I think a lot of times Grealish gets the free kick, he stays down, does up his socks, up to halfway up his calves, when he could be, you know, staying on his feet, getting a quicker pass off. I just think the whole thing with, I don't know why, maybe, like I said, used to kind of, maybe I missed the boat on this one. I just think people are obsessed with how many free kicks he wins. Sure, I think, remember Kevin Davis for Bolton, he used to be the most fouled player. Like, I don't get why it's such a big deal nowadays. It should be about assists and goals. But I just think it's mad about, I just think it's crazy people go on about how often he gets free kicks, how often he's fouled.
When you're looking at the way England play and it's like so deep and they were inviting pressure on, as Dixon said, you have two big guys in Maguire and Kane especially, but to get them a little bit more into the Italian half, they weren't going into the Italian half. That guy can, with a click of a switch, can, you know, win these frees, take the ball forward, he has great passing ability as well. So that's why I kind of think he would have been the one to take the pressure off England a little bit.
It's because I actually like Grealish. I think that it's almost taken away from him. People just say that. He has a lot more to his game than that. So I think
what they're trying to say is, though, that people have to foul him to stop him. And I think it's a compliment to his dribbling ability and his strength like that.
Yeah,
they're saying exactly. He draws all these fouls because that's the only way to stop him. Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's actually for the fact that he wins three kicks. I think it's trying to say that he's so good, he has to draw a couple of players onto him and bring him down. I agree with what you're saying. Yeah, people are obsessed with that point. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's great points going back and forth between you because he has so much more to offer, as Elliot said. But at the same time, you know, his free kicks in a game like that would have been valuable, as Dixon said, for Maguire and Kane in the box. So while he has so much more to offer, at the same time, those frees, you know, would have been vital in that game if they'd have got one when they were not creating, I suppose, much at the time. And it would have been a break maybe for the defence.
And Elliot, on Grealish's socks, so you can't get them further up his calves because they're huge.
I think he wears a certain type of sock, doesn't he? He doesn't wear like men's socks or something. There's something weird with it. And he wears like a little bank card it's cool.
Is it a cereal box or something?
I know Chrissy has good calves now, but I don't know. I wouldn't say they're nice as Grealish.
Yeah, well, I won't be copying Jack Grealish in any way. Don't worry about that.
Same hairstyle.
Similar.
Anyway, moving on. We'll go to the penalties. Massive talking point, the penalties. Dixon, I'll come to you. If you were a footballer and it was a massive tournament, you hadn't kicked the ball or you were coming on for 1 minute and then you're chosen to take a penalty, how are you feeling? What's going through your head? I know we're not professional footballers, but what were you thinking at the time, or how would you feel yourself, or how do you think you might feel yourself in that situation?
I thought this was ridiculous. And it just shows you that Mancini versus Southgate, and Mancini won because of these decisions. Like, I know if I'm playing football, like, I need to feel the ball for 10 or 15 minutes before I know what the ball is like, how it feels to kick it or strike it. And he's expecting Rashford and Sancho and Saka, well, Saka was on, sorry, but Rashford and Sancho to take a penalty after being on the pitch for a minute, probably haven't touched the ball. I know Rashford got a few touches, but I don't think Sancho really did. the biggest kick of their life. And it was just crazy. I felt so sorry for them. Obviously, because United players as well, I felt more sorry for them. But crazy, crazy decision by Southgate. I don't know what he was thinking there. Like, you've got the likes of Henderson on the pitch, who should have been higher up the list. Like, it's not the players that decide, because I think Keane was saying someone should be pulling Saka, saying not to take the penalty. But, like, really, the manager decides the order of the penalties. And there's also a rumour going around, I don't know how true this is, that Pickford was sixth on the list. Now, how crazy is that?
I don't know how you can be. I think you're right, Dix. I think it's down to the manager picks who's taking the penalties. But I think Roy Keane said it. I don't know how you could be Raheem Sterling. There's a couple of other big players on the pitch at the time. Grealish, Raheem Sterling. And Henderson had actually gone off that point, Dixon, because he'd actually missed the penalty in the warm-up game. So I don't think Southgate fancied him. So I think, I don't know how you could be Raheem Sterling or Grealish and have a young 19-year-old player going up ahead of you to take a penalty. I know the manager's picking it, but I don't know how you could see that come out. The pressure of the poor 19, like, and I felt really bad for the player. I obviously didn't want him to win, but I would have preferred Harry Kane to miss the penalty or something like that. Not a young lad especially the way we've seen the abuse the three players got, which is absolutely horrendous as well. So just makes it a lot worse. But yeah, I think likes of Grealish. I think Grealish tweeted, didn't he, that, oh look, I did want to take one. Yeah.
That's crazy in itself. Like, that just undermines Southgate then. So
yeah.
I don't know what happens then. When next England camp and Grealish and Southgate are together, like,
But the way they're bringing the players on for one kick of the ball, lads.
It's crazy, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
You could be banging... Saka was probably banging in 100 out of 100 penalties in the training round. You can't simulate that.
Yeah,
the pressure that's on them players. The fifth penalty. Would you give him the fifth penalty?
Absolutely.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Sterling and Grealish bottled it. 100%.
I'd have to go there with Dixon there. You don't bring a player on for a minute, especially you've only kicked the ball in the warm-up, really. And, okay, you've got a feel for the crowd around because you're sitting on the seats on the outside, but you haven't got a feel on the pitch, and, you know, these sort of things do matter. You need to be kicking the ball a little bit, you know, to get that feel for the crowd too. You know, he took off, he brought Henderson on and took him off. And you can say you don't fancy him, or what, and I agree with you, Elliot, he did miss one, and, you know, Southgate can say I don't fancy him. But this is a man that's done it on the big stage. He's played in these big games. You know, Maguire stood up there. He's a leader, of course. Banged in, you know, probably the best penalty you'll ever see. Kane obviously does what he does. You need these big, big characters. Henderson is a big character.
He's steely.
Yeah, he's done it.
There's not yet. And there's no way Henderson was going to take one, I don't think.
No, absolutely not. Yeah, absolutely nothing. I reckon if Shaw had stayed on, Shaw might have, you know, decided, you know, it's a left footer going against them.
Yeah.
Really don't understand whatsoever to call himself world class. This supposedly brilliant, outstanding player that can't go up in front of a crowd, you know, and you're shooting in front of the England fans too, which will give you a bit of a, you know, a lift. And, you know, he won't do it. He wouldn't do it. And Saka, especially for a young guy like Saka, who was playing at Arsenal, he hasn't played in a big, big competitive European game. To put the spotlight on him is absolutely disgraceful. And Southgate showed, again, his naivety, again, at the highest of levels.
It was a great penalty by Maguire, wasn't it? I was a big fan. It was like a goal kick penalty.
I think the camera went
he off. Just boxed it in. Off.
He must have played junior C football or something for a summer. Brilliant. Because took the roof off.
I think, here's my little theory now for you, lads, right? I think, because, you know, the way Southgate was building up Saka and picked Saka for the tournament and played him in a lot of games. I think if Saka had scored the winning penalty, that's why he had him at number five. It would have been Southgate's at the masterstroke, but it didn't work for him. So that's my conspiracy on it anyway.
But lads, you know, when you're preparing for penalties, like, let's say they were preparing on the training pitch, more than likely they did a full training session with everybody, so they're after getting through a full training session, plenty of touches of the ball, and then at the end they probably practiced their penalties. They didn't show up from the dressing room like Cole, let's say, or after doing a little tap around and then go and hit their penalties, like they were well warmed up. So the preparation would have had players having loads of touches of the ball, not coming off the bench where they were sitting down, maybe did a little warm up, come onto the pitch and then take the penalty. Like it was absolutely, it was just ridiculous. I don't know what, in what way in Gareth Southgate's head that worked. That was going to work out. I don't know. And he missed the penalty himself. You know, he surely knew, you know, the pressures that come with it and, you know, what goes on. And then he picks, he just takes the three lads off the bench to bring him on. I don't know. I don't think Henderson played particularly well when he came on. But definitely if you were thinking penalties-wise, as Ken has said, for regards having a bit of steel, like he wouldn't have felt pressurized, I don't think, or as pressurized as others going to that situation. He just took the penalty and what happened. You know, it's a different ball game for the three younger lads, I think, coming on to take it. Anyway, lads, I think we'll move on. There's one man I want to mention, and he's not mentioned enough. I used to sing a song to Nye Dixon, I remember a couple of years ago, about this man. I was always a big fan of his, and that's Roberto Mancini. So, Dixon, I'm definitely going to come to you to ask you about this man. His record is unbelievable. You must rate him as a manager. How good is he? Like, this is a massive achievement for him just to add to his list.
Oh, yeah. Look, he's a brilliant manager. Don't get me wrong. Just a pity he represented the blue side of Manchester, but thankfully he was in the blue colours on a Sunday evening. No, quality manager. And to do it at this level, with that team that no one really fancied before the tournament, they were probably not rank outsiders, but they were probably fourth, fifth in everyone's books. But unbelievable achievement from Mancini. And now they have the record for the most games unbeaten for an Italy side. Like, that's just, it's unbelievable. It's 34, amazing.
Is it?
Yeah, 34, yeah. It's amazing what he's done, because there's been so many good Italy sides of the past with unbelievably rock-solid defences. And he's done it with two ageing centre-backs who are obviously world-class, but they're still ageing, and two full-backs that maybe not a lot of people would have known before this tournament. So, unbelievable achievement for Mancini. 11 goals conceded, I think, in them 34 games. Insane stats.
Dixon, you say that nobody fancied them, but you had them from the start. Surely you put a tenner or 20 quid in it, did you?
I might put one or £2 on them, all right, yeah.
I think that's a new gold watch you have on there right now.
The Rolex, yeah.
You got credit, Nixon. He did have it there from the start. You got to give credit where it's due there. You know, he did call it. Mancini, though, I think he definitely has improved his management skills. That's one thing he was criticised at Man City for. Now, look, maybe you guys have a theory here. It is different working day to day. Obviously, you know, seeing the players every day, then to go and have a camp with them, you know, every couple of months. But tactician, he is a tactician, no two way about it. And I don't know what you guys think about that, but I think there's a difference when you manage every day with a, you know, with these players. Like he had at City, he was falling out left, right, and center with them, but he apparently has improved his man management skills, and that was there to see. I seen it in the Euros there, brilliantly calling his players and motivating. I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, that Italy squad looked really together, but it could be a good reason why Mourinho might be a better international manager maybe than club manager now at this stage of his career.
Definitely agree.
Maybe Mourinho's better in small doses or something. Just one of them people.
Yeah, one of them. Bit like Chrissy.
I'm just wondering, boys, is there a way of getting Declan Rice's tears and injecting them into my veins? Anyone have an idea?
Oh.
Chrissy, come on. Like, that was for you, lad. Come on.
Yeah. I think I've discussed enough about Declan Rice now and Jack Grealish. I'm ready to move away from him. Regards Mancini, though, just what a manager. Just what a manager. Yeah. Big fan.
What was the song, Chrissy? Can you give us a rendition?
Of the song? No, I can say it. I think it comes from Italy to manage Man City. Mancini. Oh, I think that's it, yeah. I know. When Man City were stopping Man United that time, I got great enjoyment, but sure, that didn't last too long either. But lads, overall, I'd have to say the Euros itself, fantastic tournament. I can't remember watching a tournament as exciting, going to extra time as much, as many goals. I just thought it was a really enjoyable watch. Any I suppose we reviewed the final, but any moments that stand out to you, you know, when they show highlights of, you know, the tournament over the years, or is there any kind of magic moment, I suppose, that might stand out for you?
Yeah, it'd have to be the Switzerland-France game where it's 3-1 to France and Seferovic scores. Brilliant, brilliant goal. Brilliant header. And then Gavranovic, right at the depth of normal time, puts that ball in the back of the net. That really started the excitement for me. Like, you know, that was a real start to things. Obviously, great to see Switzerland go through. But that moment there, with like 10 minutes to go, they scored twice. One of them with the last kick of the game. So, yeah, that was a real standout moment for me.
Unbelievable. And it's the underdog just getting through, you know, and France, there's so many people back France, and just to see the underdog come through, someone you're not expecting. Yeah, brilliant. Love that as well.
For me, I'd say it was the Denmark-Russia game, because obviously Denmark, we know how much trouble they had in the competition, and they won that game, I think 4-1 in the end. That was a great moment to see them going through after what they went through. So that would have been the moment for me. But there were so many moments, Chrissy, as you said. Probably the best would have been Declan Rice crying, but doesn't matter.
I didn't hear the second part of that. Yeah, go ahead,
Dixon. Yeah, I'd agree with Elliot. Probably the whole Danish journey was the highlight for me, but then obviously a couple of moments of individual brilliance. Sheik's goal, and one that doesn't get mentioned enough, I think, was Modric's goal against Scotland. Beauty.
Yeah, brilliant. Anything for you, Chrissy?
Deadly. There was a moment you said as a Chelsea fan, actually, that I didn't really know a lot about with Viali, and I seen his reaction after the final whistle. And that kind of, you know, it's when somebody's been through a lot, I suppose, and it's a big thing for his nation, kind of seeing how much it meant to him. And after, like, I think that was a big moment, because we had the tragedy of Eriksen and stuff like that, and seeing Denmark get back. But seeing Viali like that after a game, I thought was a magical moment too in itself.
No, beautiful moment.
Thanks for listening to the Flatback 4 podcast. Football is not coming home, so Rome will have to do for now.